Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BiteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.BiteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Edward Villowen. He is author of Ordinary Goodness, The Effortless Path to Creating a Life of Meaning and of Meaning, Beauty, and Happiness. People often struggle to find a life filled with passion, happiness, and just plain goodness. This struggle drives many to depression and addictive tendencies. Author and New Thought minister Edward Villowen argues that the struggle need not be an arduous or painful one, that through everyday acts of kindness, faith, and compassion, we can create peaceful and contented lives. Using personal stories, practical tips, and exercises, this book shows us that regardless of our circumstances, we can create meaning and beauty in our lives in the world. Edward Villowen is a senior minister at the Center for Spiritual Living in Santa Rosa, California. In addition to being author of Ordinary Goodness, he is author of The Power of Meditation and co-author of Spirit is Calling, Practice the Presence, and also Seeing Good at Work. Okay, everyone. Again, today I have my very special guest, Edward Villowen, and we're talking about his book, Ordinary Goodness, and I'd like to welcome Edward to the show. Good day, sir.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
It is my pleasure. Anything I can do to spread some goodness amongst our listeners in the world is certainly worth my time.
Right.
This is it seems like we're in a world where goodness seems to be a second thought to some people.
Right. There's a lot of turbulence and change in our world, and that's part of the reason why I wrote my book, is to encourage people that despite all of the changes that are going on in our world, and even with all the technology that's progressing, that there's still nothing more wonderful and powerful than ordinary goodness that can connect us to each other and help guide our choices and declare all over that the world is actually not such a bad place to be in.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you know, I guess probably the first place we should start is, if you wouldn't mind sharing with the listeners, exactly how would you define goodness and why ordinary?
Well, let's start with the ordinary part. It's because it's so easy to overlook when defining goodness. It's those simple things like being good to each other, helping strangers, giving a compliment, that are very easily overlooked. I think because the world is so compelling, there's so many things to pay attention to that we sometimes forget the normal, natural, easy goodness that is in us. And, you know, a good way to define goodness, and I certainly went through this process, is to just pull out a dictionary or look online for a thesaurus and look up what are synonyms for goodness. And you'll find everything from love and kindness, compassion, virtue, strength, caring. And that's what I'm talking about. And I think it's ordinary in us. The problem is we tend to lose track of it or maybe even mislay it.
Yeah, well, you know, and I agree that quite often we don't give it its proper due and attention. So do you think that, again, we're, like you mentioned, we're confronted with, you know, what appears to be a world in chaos. But do you feel that this goodness is innate within each individual?
Well, I think it's certainly there. I think it's inside of us. You know, it's a good philosophical question. Here's what I notice. When I talk about goodness, people come alive. So I don't know what it is that I'm touching, if it's innate, or I certainly think it is. I do know that we seem to respond beautifully to it. When we are good to each other, as in kind to each other, it has the effect of lifting us up, and you can give courage to another person just through simple acts of goodness. So I would call that natural, if I can, or innate is a good word. It's certainly there.
Yeah. Now, some people seem to have a natural tendency toward goodness. Now, and I read in the beginning of your book, it seemed like your grandmother was one of those individuals, you know, that was her natural way. Do you think that, you know, I too believe that there is that seed within us, you know, to be able to do that. But it seems that maybe some people have difficulty in bringing that, nurturing that seed. And so do you think that, first of all, what role do you feel that the family or role models play in that? And then from that, is this something that we can learn or, you know, to be more expressive with goodness?
Right. Some of us seem to have a natural inclination for it. Others of us have to relearn it, and it could be because we haven't had clear role models that we don't know how to use this goodness inside of us. Some people come to understand their innate desire to help and be compassionate by way of tragedy in their own life. Maybe it's somebody else helped them and they want to pay it forward. But we can learn to bring more goodness into expression in our life, and it starts with paying attention to it. I think that's probably the biggest problem, that we don't ordinarily pay attention to goodness for a number of reasons: lack of role models, the compelling nature of the world, and so on.
Yeah, so I agree, paying attention and just raising awareness to its existence would help a lot. It seems that when we're bombarded often with negativity, you know, it always grates on me that I, you know, watch a 30-hour news program, and then the last 30 seconds is a feel-good story, you know, with the other 29 and a half minutes or 20 minutes being, you know, all of the, you know, strife and struggle and conflict. So, you know, is this, I mean, you know, why do you think that it is that we are so drawn to the negative, or why does the negative seem to get so much attention?
I think sometimes it's because it's presented to us in urgency, in language of urgency and danger, and so it heightens our attention. Just in the same way, you know, if I stub my toe or I drop a hammer on my toe, all of my awareness and all of my attention goes to that toe, and I forget that everything else simultaneously in my body is still working very well. And so I think the bombardment of negative images has the effect of grabbing our awareness and taking over our awareness to the point we forget that ordinary people are still functioning rather well, families are still being good to each other, strangers are still helping each other, and there is such wealth in slowing down enough in life to notice and pay attention to what is also simultaneously happening in the world, terrific acts of kindness.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I know for myself, whenever I encounter an act of goodness, someone being just kind, you know, it truly warms the heart, you know, and then it, for me, it also, you know, reverberates to the, you know, point of passing it on and acting in kind as well, because it seems to be in the, you know, forefront of my mind, you know, having just experienced a pleasant act. And
yeah.
It seems like if, you know, if we can maybe, you know, increase the number of positive acts of kindness and goodness that hopefully it would reverberate and, you know, increase in number.
And it also brings balance, because there are still very difficult things that we have to deal with in the world. There are still a number of issues facing us. And it's not all love, peace, and joy out in the world. However, when we increase the number of acts of kindness, connections on a heart level, then that brings the balance. It's like it refuels our tanks so that when we do go out into the world, we're responding to the world from a more centered place and with less grimness and morbidity.
Yeah. Now, it would seem to me that if someone is going through a challenge or having a particular difficulty, that would be a great opportunity for someone else to enter into the picture with an act of goodness. I mean, it seems that, you know, that's a prime setting calling for good.
That's right. And I think it's another one of those things that we can become more skilled at. If we come to a person in need really with the heart to listen to what it is that they need, rather than to try and impose our, you know, maybe we're on a mission to express more goodness in the world and we don't listen to them properly, the idea of listening to people and what they need will connect us on such a deep level and allow us to really be effective in spreading more goodness in the world. Listen with a generous heart is so important.
Yeah, I agree. Now, there was one area in your book that I found interesting. And when you talked about goodness and that goodness, like love, makes us exposed and vulnerable. I thought that was interesting because I'm sure that it does create that vulnerability. And, you know, some people have a little bit of difficulty being vulnerable. So what would you say
right.
to those out there who or maybe a little bit shy away from goodness with the idea that, you know, it can expose ourselves?
Right, because there's no guarantee that your goodness will be received in the same way that it is given. And there's no way of knowing that the world will respond to you in the way that you want to give your goodness to the world. And so people do shy away from it and shut down and choose the safer path. But that choice leads us into a sense of coldness and separation. Loving, like it says in the book, is very vulnerable because you have to go out into unknown territory and love without knowing how it will be returned or what effect it will have. And I think it's similar to goodness. The options for not using your natural goodness are rather slim because it'll leave you, in a sense, without using the most precious skill that you have. And that can be daunting.
Yeah. Now, it seems that one way to maybe minimize the hesitancy might be to add in the notion of unconditional, you know, so that, you know, by offering love, you know, do it unconditionally, you know, without the expectation of something being returned, or that even that it's received in the proper way, as long as you give it. Does that fit into the picture?
Yes, I think the ways of minimizing difficulty are pretty simple, and one of them is, as you said, to have no expectation. But that can be tricky. That's difficult to have zero expectation. So I can scale it back a little bit, and I can start to practice simpler practices that the stakes aren't too high. If I go to work and I start practicing giving positive feedback to my teammates at the workplace, you know, just a compliment now and then, that's an easy way to begin practicing that doesn't have a lot of stakes and won't matter a whole lot. So I try not to set the bar too high for myself when I begin. and I want to minimize difficulty, I'm going to start to do smaller things. Maybe here's a great exercise, getting to know the people in my neighborhood, by, if I don't already know them, by asking them about what's important to them, who their children and grandchildren are, and what are their interests. Those sort of connecting things seem so simple, and yet they cause so much goodness, and that is one of the ways of increasing your confidence, I call it faith, your confidence in goodness, by gently beginning to exercise your goodness muscle.
Yeah, well, you know, I can attest to that neighbor. Now, I grew up in upstate New York, and when we would be out walking, I knew very few of my neighbors. I now live in South Carolina, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and live in a community where I, you know, walk every morning. And in the course of my couple-mile walk every morning, I will probably have smiled and waved and said hi to at least a dozen people. I mean, truly a dozen.
Yeah.
I don't know them. Some of them I know, some of them by name, you know, but many of them I don't. But one thing I do know is that by the end of that walk every day, I have this natural, I mean, I've smiled enough and said hi enough, you know, and laughed enough that I truly start my day on an upbeat, you know, and so I can really attest to that as a very effective way of spreading goodness.
That's a perfect example, and I practice it too. There's a lake here in California that I walk around in the morning, and sometimes I give myself the task of doing what you do and say hello to people as they walk in the opposite direction. And you know, some people are delighted, but other people are surprised because they're not accustomed to connecting with strangers. And that is a very interesting thing, that we are not accustomed to connecting with people we don't know. And so I make that a mission for myself, and I have the exact same effect that you do.
Yeah, and I too get those that, you know, question one, and some that don't wave back, you know. So which is fine, you know, because it's, you know, to me it doesn't matter. I did, you know, as long as I, you know, I did my part. You know, if you want to wave back, that's great. If you don't, that's okay too. So, but then, you know, who knows? Maybe the second time I run across them, you know, that'll happen. And it's happened with a couple of people. One gentleman I know in particular, you know, I'm a nature photographer, so I take pictures too on my walk a lot. And one time I was taking photos in the garden of someone who's given me permission and actually encourages me to take pictures of her flowers. And this one gentleman walked by and gave me this scouring look, like, how dare I be in someone's garden taking photos, you know? And then I would say it was probably about a week later, he walked by again, but this time he saw me with the neighbor, you know, in conversation and with my camera. And then from that point on, every time he walks by, it's hi, a smile and hi, and
yeah,
you know, and my camera looks fine. So, but it was, to me, that was interesting because it was one of those cases where there was some, you know, judgment on his part, you know, as to, you know, it affected his. It kind of limited his ability to be friendly to someone. So I think that's an important thing that we have to kind of be aware of too for ourselves.
That's a really good point. The things that get in the way of us being able to express goodness and kindness to each other, and one of the most important things I've discovered, like you did, is making assumptions about people. That's when we don't know enough about the other person. And the antidote to that is to talk and connect and ask questions and listen generously. I found that when we know just a little bit about another person, it becomes more and more difficult to not feel connected to them. And as we feel connected, even to strangers a little bit more, it reduces the possibility of being rude to each other. And goodness me, there's such a possibility for having more kindness and less rudeness in our world.
That is for sure. Absolutely. We're scheduled for 45 minutes, so we're kind of halfway through. I want to take just a quick break, and I do invite listeners, if you have a question you'd like to call in, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And then when we come back, Edward, I want to explore a little bit more detail your book. It's broken down into five parts, so I kind of would like to go go through the parts so that the individuals listening will know exactly what they'll get from reading your book, okay?
Thank you very much.
Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break. Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide: books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again. Today, my very special guest is Edward Fullan, and we're talking about his book, Ordinary Goodness, The Surprisingly Effortless Path to Creating a Life of Meaning, Beauty, and Happiness. And again, you can find out more about Edward by visiting his website, edwardfullan.blogspot.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Edward.
Hi, thank you.
Hey, okay. Well, as I mentioned before the break, your book is broken down into five parts. Part one,
yes,
is Ordinary Goodness. Two, Ordinary Kindness. Three, Ordinary Compassion. Four, Ordinary Faith. And five, Finding Faith. So if you wouldn't mind, can you explain, you know, first of all, why is it that you structured the book like this with those particular focus, those areas of focus?
Yes, I chose those because I think they each lead one into the other. Goodness leads to kindness. When you start thinking about goodness and your own goodness in you and other people, it's going to lead to a different relationship with people. When you have a kind relationship with people, it's going to lead you to a deeper understanding of their trials and tribulations, and then compassion emerges out of that. And if you keep at this, you start to gain confidence in goodness in yourself and other people, and I call that faith. And faith leads us to a consideration of the unanswerable questions, like why am I here, what's going on, and that's the part, the fifth part, about finding your own faith, which is really the question, what do I believe? What motivates me in this world? What are my values?
Yeah. Okay, well, we talked the first half of the show about goodness, and goodness knows we could probably talk about that the whole show, but let's kind of go into ordinary kindness. You talk about goodness kind of moving into kindness. One of the topics, the subtopics in that book, that category, excuse me, is kindness as a habit. So can you talk about how individuals can, first of all, recognize that maybe where they fall in the area of being kind to, in the area of kindness, how they exhibit, and then maybe how they can create more kindness, make it a much stronger habit in their life.
It is tricky because it means discovering that place where we're not being kind. That means I have to pay attention and have a look inside. Where am I not being kind? One of the things I noticed in our world is in the world of electronic communication, because we're on the other side of a screen or a smartphone, sometimes the way we communicate with each other in those fast, short, quick bites of information, it lacks kindness because we don't have the visual cues of the other person's response and we don't know anything about them. And so I see that same lack of kindness creeping into communication. So when I'm talking with people and we're studying how to be more kind, what we have to do is make a conscious effort to bring kindness into our communications. Sometimes I even ask people to write their own personal pledge to kindness, how that shows up for them and what they plan to do. In other words, how do they want to move through the world in a particular day? I even ask them to pin it up on their refrigerator so they can refer to it regularly, because people slip back into old habits. For me, for example, I grew up in a house where sarcasm was really the rule of the day. And we thought of sarcasm as a sport, you know, and I didn't even realize how unkind it was until somebody pointed out to me. They said, look, you say that kindness is a value, but you come across as rude and condescending, and I hadn't realized it. So I had to consciously examine the way I communicated. I found a lot of help in studying nonviolent communication, for example, and people will have to find something like that for themselves so that they can have a tool to examine how am I actually communicating, and in that way they can shed the habit of unkindness.
Yeah. Now, I know some who love to employ sarcasm, and they, you know, and you know, it's and I can see where, you know, I mean, I was never good at it, you know, so, you know, but it just was not one of those things that I was able to develop. But you know, I think it's really important, you know, how you indicated in your household it was something of a sport, you know, and, you know, and I think that, you know, the idea of examining, you know, where in areas that we're kind or we're not, that it's really it really takes us back to our childhood environment that we establish our beliefs and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and sometimes we're not aware of that until later on in life when we look back and see, oh, I've been shaped by that environment and I'm not aware of it. I have to start looking at how I show up in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I would think that, you know, that it's particularly challenging to express kindness to someone who you maybe really don't feel that, you know, that kind to. So, I mean, you know, that's, you know, whenever you encounter something or someone who may have said or done something that you find, you know, very hurtful. You know, and, you know, and then, you know, trying to work with that and then be kind back to the individual can be a challenge. So, you know, and like one of the things I like is you're very honest about how, you know, in real life here, you know, things aren't always peachy keen, you know, that there are challenges that we're going to do, you know. So, you know, in cases like that, you know, where it's maybe a real challenge to express kindness, you know, what would you say to some situation like that?
Well, you know, one of the places in our modern life where that shows up is in emails that are angry, or somebody sends you an email and they're offended by something you've done or said, and then that instinct to write an angry response wells up. And here's one way you can improve. Interrupt the inclination to press send. And do not act. Now, this is a terrific skill to have because, you know, when we're upset or angry, we don't feel particularly kind towards a person. We really, I don't think we can trust the voices that run through our head that, you know, that are vilifying the person that we're mad at. So I try to don't send the email and take 24 to 48 hours and then come back to the email. Now look at the answer I would have written and search it for mischief, because after time has passed and I can take the mischief out, sometimes what creeps into my communication is the subtle desire to put the other person down or put them in their place. And that just doesn't pay off. It never gets me the result I want. So I do better if I look at the words on the page and think about what it is I want to say. Now, when I practice with email, don't you know that actually improves my skill in face-to-face communication? I watch for that knee-jerk reaction. And, you know, it only takes a split second to examine the thing I'm about to say. Is there a more beautiful way to say it? Because being kind doesn't mean that you become a doormat, right? It doesn't mean that you're weak and you just let people walk all over you. It means instead that you take the strong, and it does require strength, you take the stronger path of trying to figure out what is the kinder way, what is the more beautiful way to say what I need to say, to advocate for my needs and to be present in this relationship.
Yeah, that's very good. Especially, you know, the pushing the pause button and not the send button, and you know, kind of going back to it. I've done that on a couple occasions, and I'm actually, when I go back, it's like, oh boy, was I really going to do that? You know, thank goodness I didn't push that send button.
It takes so much energy to clean it up once we've done that.
I know. Exactly. So now, going from kindness to compassion. You know, one of the things that I find disappointing is when, I mean, it seems that compassion, now, this is a generalization, but it seems that compassion is, there's a great deal of compassion missing in some of our you know, modern society. You know, and there are acts of compassion that we see going on, and it's wonderful, and then I think it's very, it's wonderful to see and to remind us, but it seems that in general humanity that we really could do better in this area.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So we see these examples of compassion missing in the world, and so I have to be mindful to tell myself, well, don't use them as role models. Don't model my behavior after them. And it takes an effort of will to look for examples of compassion and seek them out and then model my behavior after them. Because it is a fact, like you say, you know, it's all there in the world. Absence of compassion, you don't have to look too hard for it. But I'm on a mission. I'm looking for the role models of compassion, because I notice that when I study them, it doesn't mean I'm in denial. It doesn't mean I'm ignoring the world. It doesn't mean I'm becoming shallow. It means I'm going to a deeper water to refresh myself so that I can come back to the world. So I'm looking for examples for compassionate behavior all the time.
Yeah, you know, that, and it's, you know, I think that it's a statement that we have to look hard for those examples, you know, versus those that aren't, you know, to me it would be just so much better that if we were able to have those good examples be just as easily accessible and recognizable and in the forefront of our mind.
Once we start the habit of looking for them, it shifts the balance and we start to see more of it. You know that idea that what we look for, we find. That as we become aware of something, we notice more of it. That it's this selective awareness. And I think that can work to our benefit. You know, the confirmation bias, I think it's called. So when we start to look for role models of compassion, we start to notice more of them. And it's almost as if the world changes a little bit. And all of these acts of compassion that were always there, they start to become available to us, and we start to notice them in ordinary people.
Yeah. It is true, you know, and I think that, you know, once we condition ourselves or train our attention, direct our attention, you know, toward those that, you know, I mean, if you find one good story of compassion, you know, quite often, even on social media, you'll have related stories, you know, so it'd be, you know, that's a great way of being able to, you know, find example after example, you know, of a positive, uplifting story.
Right, and to share the stories of compassion extended towards yourself on social media is a way to bring other compassionate stories out. I remember when my cat died very quickly of a mysterious illness, and on a weekend he got very ill, and so I had to gather him up, and I couldn't do it by myself, and I had to ask a neighbor who got up in the middle of the night, and me with my very messy cat, and took me to the emergency hospital, and I told that story on social media, and it brought out all of these other stories from other people who had been touched by little acts like that. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that I think there's just too little of, and we can bring it alive by sharing it and talking about it.
Yeah, I agree. Now, ordinary faith. Let's talk about faith. Now, I know in the book you indicated that it's not necessarily religion, even though religion does play a part in some folks' faith. But can you talk about exactly to you what is faith, and why is it just so important for us to have it as a part of our life?
I think if we take it in out of the world of religion for a moment and talk about faith in terms of trust or confidence that is built up when we have more and more experience that encourage us and give us that confidence, and that's what I'm talking about. I use the word faith because, you know, faith is that element of things that you can't prove and you have no business believing in because there's no evidence. And there is an element of that in goodness, kindness, and compassion that we have to give it and express it. We don't know why, and we don't know why we're so sure of it. And there can be that element of why in it. So as we practice more, we become more willing to trust the unknown and to not worry about whether or not our goodness will be returned. I also call it faith because there seems to be a mysterious way that it communicates itself from one person to other. And here's what I mean about it. Sometimes when you don't have faith, or let's call it courage, or let's call it resiliency, you can pick it up just by being close to somebody who does have it. It seems that we have that effect on one another. It's like we can borrow it from being with people. I remember a clergyman once said to me that, you know, when you're all prayed up, you have a beneficial effect on the people around you who may not be. And I've never forgotten that, you know, when you fill your tanks with goodness and kindness and compassion on an ongoing basis, you have the effect of encouraging the people around you to the point where they may develop their own confidence in the world.
Yeah, that, you know, that is true. And, you know, that's, I liked the definition or the perspective of faith being trust and confidence in the unknown. And And then part five, since we're kind of getting close to the end of the show here, in part five, that's okay. In part five, you talk about finding faith. So, you know, for those who aren't able to borrow it, you want some of their own. And I know there's several areas within that part of the book about finding faith, but in general, where does one begin? Is it just beginning to view one's own part in this world and what one's purpose is?
You know, I think this is the part where we can bring religion back in. And where whatever your religion is, it's probably a good idea to practice it. And it's probably got in it some practices that will lead you to answering some of those big questions. I get to travel all over the world. I get to go to Indonesia. I get to go to Thailand and take people on spiritual pilgrimages. And we study the faith traditions of those countries. And I noticed that there's something in common in the people there among those people who practice their faith, whether I'm talking to Hindus or Muslims or Buddhists or Christians. Those who, if I could say it this way, take their tradition seriously and turn it into a day-to-day practice, and that may mean they pray every day, it may mean that they meditate every day, whatever it is that they do, that practice seems to connect them to their ordinary goodness or even their concept of the divine. And so I realized for myself that after writing this book, I started to understand the importance of the role of having some kind of practice. I also think it's important to ask oneself, what do I believe? And I give an exercise in the book saying, imagine you're sitting on a radio show or a television show, and you're asked the question, what do you believe? I don't think many people have given that thought or have put words around it. And I did that at the end of the book. I sat down and thought about it. I don't think it's a final statement. I think that's an ongoing, evolving answer. But it was sure helpful to really sit down and ask myself the question, as a result of all of this exploration of goodness and kindness and compassion, what do I believe about this world and this life that I'm living? And I found that very beneficial.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, and if I think that if we look at that golden thread that kind of goes through all religions as far as, you know, kindness, goodness, and compassion, if we look at that and include practices that promote that, then I can see where, you know, it's that practice. You know, that by doing it on a daily basis, that's what makes, you know, the world better, and it makes the individual better.
Yeah, and the meaning of the word practice means you do it over and over and over and over again until you get better at it.
That's right. So, well, gosh, you know, since we're toward the end of the show, you know, what is it that, you know, you or your goals for having put together, you know, this book, Ordinary Goodness?
Oh, I really wanted to inspire people to trust what is inside of them, the goodness that is inside of them, whether it is a dim light or a bright light, to turn to it and use it. Because when they do, when they turn to that goodness, it turns to them. And when it comes through, oh, the effect of it in the world is magical. It has the ability to lift up people and change their outlook on life. And I want to encourage my readers to trust that.
Yeah, that's great. My closing music talks about people being a bright light. So I concur with that 100%. So, well, Edward, I really wanted to thank you for your time today. I've thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you, and I look forward to keeping in touch. I noticed that you're on Facebook. You've got a page, personal, and one for Ordinary Goodness. So I've already gone on there and liked that. So I'm going to continue to follow you and look forward to keeping in touch.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed this immensely.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Edward Falloon, and we've been talking about Ordinary Goodness, the effortless path to creating a life of meaning, beauty, and happiness. You can find out more by visiting Edward's website, edwardfalloon.blogspot.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's B-I-T-E radio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.